The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Let's go to 2 Chronicles for the sermon. You know, rivers are incredible bodies of water. They're really quite beautiful. I remember seeing the Mississippi as I came back from New York, how beautiful that was. They're calm when you watch them, aren't they? Calming rivers are. They're nurturing to our planet. They are an integral part of the water cycle for the entire world, actually. And rivers cover every single continent in our Earth except Antarctica. They help shape the world's topography. And the longest one in the world is the Nile. Imagine a river 4,150 miles long. The longest one in the world, and it empties out into the Mediterranean, of course. But there's one thing about rivers in which every one of them is exactly the same. It's this: no river is straight. They all wind around, don't they? They meander. Have you ever wondered why it's that way? Why a river wanders around and is crooked and twisted and turned? It's an interesting question, isn't it? It's because of this, because of the properties of water. Water always takes the path of least resistance, doesn't it? And so the water comes up as it's flowing downhill. It comes up against obstacles, and it goes around them. And that's the nature of rivers and the nature of water. It takes the path of least resistance. Now, here's my point. It's interesting to me that human nature is very, very much like water, isn't it? Because it also wants to take the path of least resistance. Human nature wants to seek pleasure and avoid any kind of pain. And that's what we have in us, every one of us. And so what happens is we become like rivers. That is, we wander, we don't follow the straight and narrow. We end up going around obstacles, and we end up taking the easy path, and we wind all over the place. We want everything to be easy. We want our destination to come with no effort. We don't want to overcome. We want to get by. And so for too many of us, it's easier for us to watch television than it is to pray. It's easier to read a newspaper than to read the Bible. It's easier to hang out at home than get ready and come to services when it's 101 degrees in California. And so it is that human nature settles for what's average. It settles for the mundane. It will accept what is substandard. It will do this, and it will make us half-hearted. It will take the easy way out. There's an example I want to focus on today in 2 Chronicles, if you'll go there. 2 Chronicles 25. Amaziah was the king of Judah. And his story is in chapter 25. Now, if you were to read a biography of any political figure today, you would see that the article would start out talking in a chronological order, and it would talk about his accomplishments and or her accomplishments. And it would then summarize their traits and some of their character traits and so on. But what's interesting in the Bible, it reverses this. In the Bible, when it talks about a king, it actually starts out with the conclusion. And it goes right to the issue and talks about the heart of the person. So let's look at 2 Chronicles 25 here and see this kind of biography of this king, Amaziah. He was half-hearted. In verse 1, Amaziah was 20 and 5 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 20 and 9 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jehoadan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. Now the word perfect here is actually the word shalem, and it means full or it means complete. In other words, he didn't do everything right with a perfect or a full or a complete heart. He didn't do it wholeheartedly. He did it half-heartedly. He wasn't fully for God. He was half for God, but probably half for himself. And so he started off with a fairly good beginning, and he was careful to obey God. And we see this in chapters 25, verse 3 and 4, and it says, "Now it came to pass, when the kingdom was established to him, that he slew his servants that had killed the king his father. But he slew not the children, but did as it was written in the law in the book of Moses, where the Lord commanded, saying, the father shall not die for the children, neither shall the children die for the fathers, but every man shall die for his own sin." So here he is striving to do the right thing. I think he misinterpreted, by the way, Ezekiel 18. We can talk about that in Q and A today. But I think he thought he was doing the right thing here by interpreting God's words and using them towards what the king's obligation was. But the custom of the day was that if you had someone who murdered anyone in your family, and you now became the one in charge, you would murder the murderers, but you would also, as an insurance program, you'd murder the children so that the children wouldn't ever have a vendetta against you and come back to you. So he decides he's not going to murder the children, but he's going to do it because he wants to obey God. So here's a right spirit and going in the right direction. And so he then begins to organize the kingdom under his rulership. And his first order of business was he was going to take back Edom. The Edomites were once under the king, King Joram, and he had become so wicked that God had allowed the Edomites to rebel. And they had rebelled and pulled out from underneath the control. Well, now the new king was going to take back these people and rule over them once again. So he prepares for war against them. In verse 5 it says, "Moreover, Amaziah gathered Judah together, and he made them captains over thousands and captains over hundreds, according to the house of their fathers, throughout all Judah and Benjamin, and he numbered them from 20 years old and above, and he found them 300,000 choice men able to go forth to war that could handle the spear and the shield." But now they begin to see a tiny bit of problem in him, because his heart is only half-hearted. And so he doesn't fully trust God to be able to win this war with the numbers he has. He's worried about numbers. And so he goes outside. He begins to look somewhere else. And he hires mercenaries from the northern neighbor, Israel. In verse 6 it says, "He hired also 100,000 mighty men of valor out of Israel, and he paid them 100 talents of silver." So he agrees to pay these guys 100 talents of silver. And I read in one commentary, it says it's about $1 million in today's money. And so maybe this is about $100 per man. And that's not too much money, is it? But you know where their real money would come from. They expected to enjoy the spoils from the war. So they join up for a lot less money than that. And in another case, you remember that Jesus spoke about giving a penny for a full day's labor to someone who labored in the field. So they weren't in an inflationary economy like we are today. But they were expecting, again, that they would go to war for very little money because they expected to get the gold and they expected to get the weapons and they expected to get all the gear from those individuals that they were able to overcome. So that was what was motivating them, and for good reason. That is, they weren't motivated by a belief in Judah and that government. "Now there came a man," in verse 7 of God, "and says, O king, let not the army of Israel go with you, for the Lord is not with Israel, to wit, with the children of Ephraim." And so the Israelites were totally corrupt, as you remember. They had become calf worshippers, and God didn't want the king of Judah to go to these corrupt people and use them in this war. And so he tells him he's going to not be on his side if he elects to do this. In verse 8 he says, "If you'll go, do it. But you better be strong in battle, because God will make you fall before the enemy. For God has power to help, and he has the power to cast down." And so God says, you better be strong if you go. And he's really implying the opposite of this. That is, look, if you do what I say, and if you trust me, and I'm the one you believe in, then I'm going to ensure your success, because God has the power to give you victory, or he has the power to bring you decided defeat. So Amaziah agrees he's not going to use the troops. But now we see again, there's a little problem here, a problem with his heart. His heart is not fully for God. He's concerned about something else, his money. Amaziah said to the man of God, "But what shall we do for the 100 talents which I have given to the army of Israel?" And the man of God answered, "The Lord is able to give you much more than this." Well, just think for a minute. If he didn't have to pay those Israelites, all the spoil would be his. That would be a lot more, wouldn't it? But God's able to give us everything. And herein is, to me, one of the great lessons of life that we can read in his story here. You know, you and I, we worry so much about where our next dollar is coming from. We worry about, will we get the raise? We worry about, will we be able to pay the bills? And the answer is really here, isn't it? That is this: if we have faith in God, if we're wholehearted towards Him, God will give you much more than this. That's a wonderful lesson, a startling truth, if you will, that we don't have to, we do have to plan, but we don't have to worry or be anxious if we're wholehearted towards God. He has the power to and does always bless those who obey Him. And so, especially in those things of money, we should always be faithful to God first and foremost. And so, in this case, Amaziah obeys God. In verse 10, it says this: "So Amaziah separated them, to wit, the army that was come to him of Ephraim, to go home again. Wherefore their anger was greatly kindled against Judah, and they returned home in great anger." You can imagine, because they were expecting what? Spoil. They were expecting big bucks and a big victory party. So those Israelites that were mercenaries, their hopes were dashed and they were very angry about it. And then in verse 11 and verse 12 it says this: "Amaziah strengthened himself, and he led forth the people, and he went to the valley of Salt and smote the children of Seir 10,000. And another 10,000 left alive did the children of Judah carry away captive, and they brought them unto the top of the rock and cast them down from the top of the rock, that they were all broken in pieces." Amaziah went to battle without the Israelites. It says that he strengthened himself. So you can imagine he takes a deep breath. He's going, "Okay, I hope the man of God is right here." And he takes his deep breath and he goes forward. And God gives him amazing success, insomuch that he kills 10,000. Then he takes another 10,000 and he dashes them on the rocks below of a cliff. Now, the children of Seir are who? Anybody remember that? It's Petra. It's that area of Petra is what it is. And if you go there, there's this great gorge that travels almost a mile through the area. And there's cliffs on both sides. When I looked it up in Josephus, you know what Josephus said? He said he took them to the rock that is Petra. So I'll bet you anything that what he did was he took them to that very location where that great gorge is and where the cliffs are, and he threw them off of those cliffs to their deaths below. Now, this is a pretty barbaric way to end somebody's life. But I would suggest to you that it wasn't done without thought, that in all likelihood there had been some barbarism from them towards the Israelites. Or he may have done it just to frighten the future ones who would live on, so that they wouldn't rebel in the future. But here's this first endeavor of this king. And he believes God, and he trusts God, and does what the man of God tells him to do, and he has amazing success. But there's a little caveat to the success. Let's read on here in verse 13. "But the soldiers of the army, which Amaziah sent back that they should not go with him to battle, fell upon the cities of Judah and Samaria, even unto Beth Horon, and smote 3,000 of them, and took much spoil." So they were going to get theirs, weren't they? Yes. Those mercenaries had plans to have some spoil, and they had an agreement with them, and they were going to get their money. And they weren't going to accept no from this king. And so they now took what they thought was what they deserved. And here's a lesson to me. He associated with them. And because of the association, he had to pay for that association. They would take their spoil from him. And there's a vital lesson here for every Christian sitting in this room or anyone listening in on the phone or anyone who ever listens to this tape. We cannot play with fire and expect to not get burned. There's times when we leave God's path, isn't there? There's times when we become unequally yoked with people. Our heart is for God, but it's shared. It's shared with a love for the world and what's in the world and what it can give us. So we make associations in our personal lives, in our relationships. We make associations in business. We think that we can somehow get away with something. I've seen teens in the Church of God, oh, they think it's cool to hang out with the rowdy boys. You know, they like the bad boys, you know. So they associate with them, and it isn't long before they end up getting in some kind of trouble. And they wonder, how did I get here? But it was the association. You have to pay for it. And I've seen members in the Church of God that have said, they've been told by somebody out in the business world, hey, we got some quick money here, we can invest here, we'll make some real fast money, and lots of it. And they'll make an association. And then they find themselves in trouble with the IRS because they were crooked. You understand my point? There's times where they want to make fast money, and then the deal goes wrong, and then I've seen our people get sued because they were naive and the other ones were players and they knew how the game was played. So we get into situations sometimes where we make associations with those who aren't following the same rules, and then we end up getting in trouble for it. And that's what happened to this king. And it should not happen to us. And so we've got to remember this, that who we hang with and who we get involved with and who we make our deals with can come back and bite us in the end. In verse 14, it says this, now it came to pass after the Amaziah was come from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the children of Seir and set them up to be his gods. And he bowed himself down before them, and he burned incense to them. Listen, this is a shocking thing to consider. He was just told by God, I'll protect you, I'll give you victory. He goes and gets victory, and now he comes back and brings the gods back and he worships them. What's this all about? It's not too hard to understand if you understand the half-hearted mindset. Because we're not ever sure when we're half-hearted if it was because we followed God. Think about this. He follows God. Now he goes out and he wins against the Edomites. But what happens? Over here, 3,000 people were hurt. Over here, they came back and they attacked. The Israelites attacked. So can't you see somebody thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't have followed that man of God. If I would have kept the Israelites on my side, maybe this would have never happened over here. Or it's possible when you're double-minded to come back and say, well, maybe it wasn't God that did this for me. Maybe it wasn't a blessing from God. Maybe instead, I just had more troops or we were more well-trained. Do you see how the double-minded man, the double-minded thoughts, how they work? You can always find an excuse, can't you? You can always find a reason. Remember this. There's other times where people in the church, for example, we will have blessings. We will have healings. And we will have things that we know God has done for us. And then some time goes by and we forget, don't we? I've seen ministers who were healed who eventually left the church later on. They forget. People think sometimes that because they're in the Church of God, because they're keeping God's commandments, they think like Job thought, well, everything should just go perfectly for me. God should set a hedge around me. But when something happens that we don't think should have happened, like Israelites coming over and killing 3,000 of our people and spoiling our cities, or if we think that we have problems, an illness occurs to us, or a business deal falls through, where's God? What's the profit of serving him? You see how the double-minded man can think? You can be for God, believe God, and trust God, and then you can turn around and say, well, maybe it was something else. Maybe it really wasn't God. Maybe I don't have a responsibility towards God. But my point is this. I've seen this happen where when we don't get what we want, When things get really tough, I have seen people lose interest in God when they don't get their way, when He isn't some kind of magic genie that gives them whatever they want, then they lose interest and they back out and they fall away. But I ask you today to remember this. Through many afflictions we enter the kingdom of God. And the same afflictions that are accomplished in the world are accomplished in our brethren. And this is what the scriptures tell us. And it has to be that way. We can't have a perfect soft road into the kingdom of God, or we won't be worth our salt, and we won't be able to ever help the people in the kingdom of God who have suffered like we have suffered. We won't be able to identify with them. So, half-hearted, a man can think, well, maybe the advice was wrong. Maybe the victory was just mine. And so it was this way, too, in that area of the time. Many of the people thought they had a god of the land. So their gods were stronger than your god, you know, was the kind of thinking that they had. And so they would go to war, and they often thought, well, whatever god was the strongest one. But they also thought sometimes when they won, for example, the losers would think, well, maybe our god decided to go ahead and go over to the other side. And so there's some who think that Amaziah actually felt that the gods of the Edomites had turned to help him, and he was worshiping those gods in thanks for giving him the victory. But you see how your mind can get confused. He started out loyal and faithful to God, but because he was half-hearted, you can always see it another way. And this is one of the possible ways. He should have taken those false gods right up to Petra. He should have taken them right up to the cliff, and he should have thrown them down on top of all those people. And he would have done that if he would have been wholehearted. He would have done it if he would have been fully wholehearted towards God. But he was only half-hearted, wanted his own way, and so he did this. Does it ever happen to us in the Church of God? Sure. What are our gods today? Well, sex, power, status, money. Do we ever turn to those gods? Because we don't get a lot out of worshiping God in our minds, a lot of the things that we want. We don't feel like things always go exactly our way. You know, it's amazing what happens. People begin to turn to the values and standards of this life. They turn to the secularism. They turn to the materialism. And you know what they do? They're successful at it. And you know what happens when they become successful? Then their mind turns more and more to themselves, and they lean less and less towards God, more and more towards the world. And so even those that have had great miracles occur can forget, just like those Israelites who saw the sea open, that saw water come out of a rock. They saw all those great miracles, and yet they forgot, and we can forget too. In verse 15, now, God doesn't go without warning his people. And so he sends the prophet once again to say, why in the world are you doing this? What is this all about? Verse 15. Wherefore the anger of the Lord was kindled against Amaziah, and he sent him the prophet again, which said unto him, why have you sought after the gods of the people, which could not deliver their own people out of your hand? Well, that's a pretty good question. And it came to pass as he talked with him that the king said unto him, are you made of the king's council? Are you put on the board of directors here? And then he says, forbear. Why should you be smitten? And then the prophet did forbear. And he said, I know that God is determined to destroy you because you've done this and you have not hearkened unto my counsel. And so here was Amaziah. He has success, but it just inflates his ego. And so he no longer felt the need to even listen to the prophet of God or to anyone. He rebukes the prophet and threatens violence to him if he doesn't shut up. How many times has this played out in history where we start out humble and God blesses us with success, and then we who are half-hearted, not fully committed to God, we're not easily led by him, and then we begin to forget God. And then we begin to make excuses, and then we begin to justify, and then we begin to think that what the church is wrong, or that, you know, we begin to argue with the scriptures, and we begin to reason and rationalize around them. We say we want to keep the commandments. We say we are God's people. But we argue around Scripture so we can justify doing what really is against the commandment. And we're good. We can justify it. We can. We can justify what we do. We argue with His Word, claiming to be Christians. And it's not much different today. And yet God is knocking on our minds through the Spirit of God, isn't He? He's trying to get our attention. He's pulling on us with that Spirit. And He does this, though. If we continue with wrong behaviors and justifying ourselves and being double-minded, He will punish us. This king, Amaziah, was half-hearted, took the path of least resistance, wandered all over the path, and went towards God, and then went away from God, and then finally turned away from Him altogether. Because I say this, the half-hearted eventually becomes wholehearted against God. That's how it plays out if we remain that way forever. So fueled and inflated by ego, without provocation, here's what He does. He challenges the king of Israel. 2 Chronicles 25, verse 17. Then Amaziah, king of Judah, took advice, and he sent to Joash, the son of Joahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, "Come, let us see one another face to face." And Joash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, "The thistle," then he sends him a little riddle, "the thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, 'Give your daughter to my son to wife.' And then there came a wild beast that was in Lebanon and trode down the thistle." Now, in this example here, Amaziah took advice. But did he take advice from God? Who did he take advice from? He took advice from his human advisors. And there's an important lesson for all of us to learn about advisors. And it's this. We've got to be careful who we take advice from, don't we? We do. And I say this, here's the principle. You know who you can trust? The loyal opposition. The loyal opposition. Because what people do, they set themselves up in corporations, they set themselves up in churches, or kings set themselves up, and they surround themselves with men who will rubber stamp anything they say. Because it sounds good. We want to hear, "Oh, whatever you say, just, oh, whatever you want," or "You're always right." You don't ever, ever want to do that. When you have people who you know are loyal, people in your family, when you have friends, when you have relatives, and they oppose you, that's when you need to listen. That's when you need to think and pay attention. There's a story that illustrates this that I think is worth telling. Lee Iacocca was put over the Chrysler Corporation, and it was floundering and failing. And it was his job to rescue that industry. And the first thing that Lee Iacocca did was he held a meeting of all the division heads, department managers, and so on. And it was a big meeting. He brought them in. Now, he had devised a bogus plan. And he put it up with a big on the board, and he had pointer sticks and all of this. And he went through the plan, and he told people all these amazing things he was going to do that were bogus, and all the great results it would have, and everyone's nodding in the audience, "Yes, yes, yes." And he said, "Okay, now I want your comments. Tell me, now I'll be free. Tell me what you think." And most of the people said, "Oh, we're behind you, whatever you say," and all that. And there were about five people in the audience, and some of them stood up and they said, "This'll never work. You'll ruin Chrysler if you try this plan. This is crazy." So at the end of the meeting, he said, "All of you who agreed with me in the plan, stand up." They all stood up. He said, "You're fired. Get out of here. I want the rest of you to stay here. And I want you to help me find the solutions and the problems and turn this company around." And he was successful. But you get my point. They weren't his enemy. They were loyal. Loyal to Chrysler. Loyal to what he wanted to do. And those are the people we should listen to. So he listened to his advisors. And his advisors said, "Wow, look, we really did a number on the Edomites. And so we can take the whole land." They wanted to do just what the pagans did. You know what they did? They would go in and invade a land and take over their people and put them under tribute. And they got richer and richer and richer. at the price of the poor people that they took over. That's all they wanted. They were just thinking of themselves. And this king fed right into it. So he challenged, this king did, he challenged the king of Israel. He says, let's meet face to face. Now you understand what this was about. This was about male ego, wasn't it? We're going to meet, we want to see a show of strength. Now this didn't sound to me like what a king of Israel should do. Doesn't it sound like high school students? Remember when the young toughs were always choosing people off and they always wanted to say, you know, push people into fighting them so they could see how tough they were? That's what it was. Just a challenge to a fight. This one, the stakes would be high. The stakes would be high. Thousands were going to die. Thousands would be lost. Judah would be severely hurt. But it's the end of someone who's half-hearted. And I say this, when we're half-hearted to God, we're always going to be dragged into a war we can't win. The Israelite king mocks Amaziah in verse 19. Then Uzziah was wroth and had a censer in his hand to burn incense. Whoops. Where am I here? Hold on. 19. You say, lo, you've smitten the Edomites, and your heart lifted you up to boast. And he tells him now, and this is such good advice, abide now at home. Why should you meddle to your own hurt that you should fall, even you and Judah with you? But Amaziah would not hear, for it came from God that he might deliver them into the hand of their enemies, because they sought after the gods of Edom. And so here's the king of Israel warning him. You know, they were so much bigger than Judah and so much more powerful. And he was warning him, look, just stay where you are and feel gloat over your destruction of Edom. Don't bite off more than you can chew. But he couldn't take the advice. So anyway, so Joash the king of Israel in verse 21 went up, and they saw one another in the face, both he and Amaziah king of Judah at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was put to worse before Israel, and they fled every man to his tent. What a horrible trouncing. And Joash the king of Israel took Amaziah king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Johaz, at Beth Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem. And he broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and all the silver and all the vessels that were found in the house of God with Obed-Edom and the treasures of the king house and the hostages also. And he returned to Samaria. This was a tragic end for this king, a tragic end for Judah and for the temple and for all the gold of the temple and of the king's house. And the king then returned to Samaria, and the king of Judah was soundly defeated. The whole nation suffered for it. And finally, Amaziah was released, and he had a terribly tragic end. We'll read that here and conclude in chapter 25, verse 25. And Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived after the death of Joash, son of Johaz, king of Israel, 15 years. Now the rest of the acts of Amaziah, first and last, behold, they're written in the book of Kings. And after the time that Amaziah did turn away from following the Lord, they made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish, but they sent to Lachish after him and slew him there. And they brought him upon the horses, and they buried him with his fathers in the city. Let's go to Revelation 3. Amaziah was written for us who live at the end of the age. And I read a commentary. As I remember, it was Josephus who said that it's worded a little awkwardly here, but he actually was in captivity 1 year. He was let out of captivity. The people who were his allies before this happened were so furious with him for destroying Judah the way he did and his egotism that they hunted him down in Lachish and killed him. Anyway, the point is this. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, but not completely, because his heart was half-hearted. He was like a river that took the path of least resistance. He did not take the hard path, which is to do God's way, even though it doesn't look like it's the best, or even though we may suffer some if we do follow him. And I say this, we at the people of God, in the church of God, at the end of the age, can and will probably make some of the same mistakes. And that was written for us so that we wouldn't. In Revelation 3 and verse 15, it says this, I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. The church at the end of the age is half-hearted. They have been blessed by God. They're rich and increased with goods, but they think it's their own doing. They're half-hearted. They don't realize it all comes from God. They're not linked to him. And as a result, they become involved more and more with the God of this world. They become rich. They accumulate their stuff. And it says, because you say I'm rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, don't you know, he says, that you're wretched and poor and miserable and blind and naked. And the riches of this world, half-heartedness will blind us over time. It will. The success goes to our head. Physical success blinds us spiritually to spiritual success. Physically, we become exalted. Spiritually, we're headed for a fall. We've got to keep our head on straight. And God does what? He sends them into a war that they can't win. They go into great tribulation. In verse 18, I counsel you to buy of me gold or character tried in the fire, the tribulation, that you may be rich in white raiment, that you may be clothed, and the shame of your nakedness doesn't appear. Anoint with your eyes with eye salve that you can see. Amaziah couldn't see, could he? He beats a 20,000 with 300,000. And he so exalted himself. And he thought he was impervious, invincible. I'll just take on Israel. And he destroyed his country. But you understand, it goes to our head, doesn't it? And the success the people of God have had in the church in the end of the age also goes to their head. And they think they're quite capable and they don't need anything else. In the past, he sent his prophets, and now he sends this prophet, and the church is warned also. As many as I love, in verse 19, I rebuke, I chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. And then again, he says this, Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hears my voice and opens the door, I'll come to him, and I'll sup with him, and he with me. Imagine yourself sitting down with Jesus Christ right now. What do you think he'd say to us? What do you think he'd say? What would he say? Don't be half-hearted. Be wholehearted is what he'd say, wouldn't he, to us? He would. And so it says, To him that overcomes, I'll grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. So these people are going to go through a war they can't win, and yes, they may perish in that physically, but by doing so, they will overcome. And they will sit with him in that throne. They will become wholehearted. And there is life after this. And here is the message that he gives to us today. And I believe the message that the biography of the king of Judah, Amaziah, gives for us today is this same message. Verse 22, He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found the message beneficial. If you would like to know more about the Eternal Church of God, we would like to hear from you. You may contact us at 1-800-723-6108. We also invite you to visit our website at eternalcog.org. Once again, thanks for listening.